character to be asked. I'm not sure whether I'm going to stay seated or stand up, so I'll stay seated for now. And the board's there to help me keep track of where we're up to. Would you mind writing one? So, the love and compassion aspect of Amitabha. I was reading a poem, someone sent me a poem the other day, and whilst I was reading it, my heart opened, and I realised that I'm coming to give a talk about love. And I don't actually want to give a talk about love. I don't even want to give a talk. I want to feel it. I want to feel love. When I read this poem, I felt in touch with it. My heart was opened, and I'd already sort of written what I wanted to talk about. And one of the lines, the sort of heading, it was, tonight the focus will be love. But actually, it wasn't quite right. And the poem that was sent to me was from a book by Daniel Ladinsky, a translation of a Persian poet called Havis. And the book's called The Subject Tonight is Love. And that's what I've been trying to find. So the subject tonight is love. And I don't just want that I feel it, I want that you feel it. And I imagine that's what you want too. So may that be so. And I was thinking to myself, what are the ways that I connect with love? And poetry is one of them, music is another. I went to a great gig last night at St George's in Bristol. I just felt like I didn't know anyone. I went on my own. And then I met somebody I knew, I met other people. So actually, I felt in touch with a sense of love in myself, that I could go there, it'd be okay. So what we're going to explore, what connects us with love, compassion, friendship. And one of the things, another thing is maybe standing up or sitting down to speak to people that many of you, most of you, I don't actually know. I know a few of you, and it's good to see you. So standing up or going to read a poem, or do you have a mitra ceremony, or introduce someone, or to play guitar. Or, I'm sure we've all got our own versions of it. What puts us in touch with that experience of aliveness that can sometimes feel like love? So, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't even know if I'll continue to look at my notes at all. But whatever happens, it'll be okay if I'm in touch with that love. So tonight I feel fortunate to be here to talk to you about Amitabha, the Red Buddha of love and compassion. Tonight the subject is love. So Satchalila had asked me would I send a little brief to Kema Jyoti about what I'm going to be talking about. And I felt a bit ambitious with what I wrote, but I introduced the evening as that we'll be looking at the love and Sangha aspects of Amitabha, the Red Buddha of the Western realm. During the evening, love will be our focus, and from this perspective, we'll reflect on our relationships and the preciousness of human life. We will consider, with body, speech and mind, if there can be any more appropriate response to connecting with ourselves and each other than with love and compassion. So how are we going to do that? I could have brought Visantra's book, but I'm sure that as you've been looking at the mandala of the five Buddhas, that you may have, or you have a chance to have a look at what Visantra says about Amitabha. So I'm going to tell you a bit about my experience and about love. Well, Thich Nhat Hanh, I've got a neat note here. Thich Nhat Hanh suggests that it's about knowing how to love ourselves. He said, the real object of our love is not outside of us. The real object of our love is ourselves. We have to know how to love ourselves. Know how to return to our true nature, to see the wholesome, the good, the true, and the beautiful within us. Then we will be able to see that in others. And the Buddha, also the Buddha talked about us searching around the whole world looking for someone to love, or worthy of our love, and that there's no one more worthy or deserving of our own love and compassion than ourselves. Yeah. And I've been working up thinking about this talk, and I saw something. I was at my parents' house and I saw a tragedy of some sort on the television and people responding. And I felt this longing in myself to contribute to the well-being of the world. And then I thought, well, I'm going to Bristol. I'm going to give a talk on love and compassion. And I thought, well, actually, that's it. That's what I'm doing. I contribute to the world and whatever I do. And it doesn't have to be good. And then Mary Oliver's poem came about, you do not have to be good. You just have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. And I thought, well, I love the Dharma. I can go and talk about the Dharma and my experience of the Dharma. I want to live it. I want to share it. I want to, whatever happens, may I be connected with compassion. And Jnanaponika Tera says, what is the highest manifestation of compassion? To show the world the path leading to the end of suffering. The oath pointed out, trodden and realised to perfection by him, the exalted one, the Buddha, the path pointed out. Trodden and realised to perfection by him, the exalted one, the Buddha. So, maybe walk the path together tonight. So we're looking, we're going to look at Amitabha, and we're going to talk a little bit about me and my experience. We're going to, you're going to get an experience of yourselves, of your own, of love, compassion, Sangha, Amitabha, and then we're going to relate it to the world. And Bhante talks about the Dharma being about the theoretical and the practical, so we can get a little bit of the experience, but much of the practical, the practice of it. And I went to a course by an NVC teacher, Suna Ketu, and it was about sharing the Dharma, and there were three things that I found really helpful. He suggested that we explain, we explore, and we experience. So that's my theme for this evening, that may I explain what we're going to do. May we explore it together. May we experience it. And in our body, speech and mind, those three, the threefold way. So I just want to check, it's the first night I've been here of this series of talks that you're doing. I just want to check who's been to the other talks about the Buddhas. Can you put your hands up if you've been to any of the other talks? Okay, so for some of you, this is your first night of one of the talks about the archetypal five jhanas. Okay. So, archetypal. Yeah, archetypal. I heard someone describe it as experiencing it in the depths of the mind, that it's not the Buddha, but the Buddha being a human being who walked about Padmasambhava yesterday. He's an archetypal bodhisattva, but he also was a human being. So Amitabha wasn't ever a human being. He's an archetypal Buddha that we experience in the depths of our mind. And he's red, obviously. And like I was talking with Satchalila earlier, that he's, the jhanas, the five Buddhas, are often described as one light, that it shines through a prism and becomes, so a white light shining through a prism becomes different colours. So they're all aspects of the enlightened Buddha. Each of these five jhanas, five Buddhas, archetypal Buddhas, are aspects of the Buddha, aspects of enlightenment. So we're going to see how we connect with those aspects. So we're going to hear firstly about me and my relationship to Amitabha. And with love at the centre, we're going to look at the preciousness of human life, Amitabha's presence at the sunset of life, and death or spiritual death. He's often associated with death, particularly in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and at the time of a bardo. And a bardo, for anyone who's not aware of that word, is a sort of time of transition. That's how I describe it, a time of transition that often happens at death or in between death and rebirth or change, any sort of change. Compassionate response to suffering and empathy and non-violence in the way we think, speak and act. Yeah, so... me. It's actually little mentioned, yes, I've had a kidney transplant recently, and that we met at the time of my ordination and the ordination retreat that we were both on with Sam Ashuri and others. So I'm going to say a little bit about those two things, and for me, they are going to be at the centre of a mandala of my experience. So ordination, for me, that was quite a big bardo. So the word bardo, transition. And it lasted 3 months up in the mountains of Spain, where there were lots of beautiful sunsets and lots of beautiful friendship. And yeah, I went up there not knowing, at the time of ordination, I knew that we take on a practice of a particular Buddha or Bodhisattva. And I felt a bit puzzled, a bit confused, because I didn't feel entirely sure about which Buddha or Bodhisattva I felt the strongest connection with, because I seemed to have connections with each of them. And my preceptor, my tree, had asked me, so, do you have a connection, or do you have feelings for any particular Buddha or Bodhisattva? And I thought for a moment, I said, well, yeah, I've got feelings for Padmasambhava. But Amitabha's got feelings for me. Well, what can I say? So it was a bit of a, you know, I really like that energy, you know, I respond to the energy of Padmasambhava. And I knew there was a lot of learning for me to there was a, you know, even looking at Amitabha, the stillness. At that time I felt quite an active, you know, energetic person. I was running 10Ks and I felt like I had a lot of energy. But there was something that I wanted to learn from this Buddha. That stillness, that spaciousness, the wisdom of discrimination, discriminating wisdom, you know, seeing each person as unique and uniquely beautiful. And things happened on the retreat that helped point towards Amitabha's loyalty or love always being available, being present in my life. Unfortunately, you know, I got given this name, Amita Shuri, which means boundless or limitless heroine. Yeah. So, connecting with love and friendship on the retreat. And spiritual death, really. There's a spiritual death that happens. You go through this journey, this process. And I knew I was becoming a new being. I didn't know what my name was going to be, but definitely... sat with myself, you know, I learned even just from sitting in that posture, you know, when we sit in that posture, there's something can happen. We do it in our meditation practice. It's often the first image that people come into contact with Buddhism is Amitabha, Buddha in meditation. Yeah, so I'm still learning what happens here in this space that he incubates with the sort of gentleness of his two thumbs touching. I'm still learning about how to be with that uncertainty, you know, what's there. And up there, up in the mountains, my gran died during the ordination retreat, and we were doing a practice called the six element practice, and Amitabha was, he felt really, really present, you know. I was reading a bit about the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and the people, my friends in the ordination retreat, they would do a practice with me, and just with awareness of my gran. Yeah, so I mean, there's even in Japan and China, there's traditions that are set up around Amitabha, Pure Land schools, because when they say when you die, that you may be reborn in a Pure Land, a happy land, the land of bliss, which is called Sukhavati, and there's sutras written about this land, Sukhavati, and actually, in some ways, we don't know if it's a place, or actually can we create this pure land in life while we're alive. Yeah. So I took on the practice of Amitabha. And as you can see, my red tights and red things to celebrate on this evening and connect with that. There's a lot of warmth and warm associations that I have in relation to Amitabha. Although I even also got this as his seed syllable. Does anybody know what it is? Chri. Chri. So Chri, where there's Hung or Om Mahung. So Chri is, I was saying to Martin tonight, a blush. It's a blush or there's a counterpart called Apatrapia, Chri and Apatrapia. If we ever do something unskillful or we're not sure what to do, what's the right thing to do, we can think of our teacher and respect that we might have for some, or the Buddha, think of the Buddha. What would the Buddha do in this situation? And if we do something that doesn't quite meet that, we might feel a sense of Chri or shame. So there's shame associated with Chri, and Apatrapia is respect for the wise. So if we act in a way that's not respectful of the wisdom of our teacher, then we might feel a sense of Chri. And it's often associated with practicing confession or telling a friend and sort of resolving not to do it again. So that's Amitabha seed syllable. And I was just in the meditation there, I just realised that I'm back in Bristol, where just more than 5 years ago I did a Karuna appeal here. So very fond associations of being in Bristol. And it was straight after that really I got quite ill. I'd just come back from ordination and I ended up in hospital for a while with my kidneys really starting to fail. And over the course of that 5 years, it's just been sort of a steady decline with function. So I've had to bring in a lot of, you know, Amitabha's compassion. And just awareness that, my body's deteriorating. Not my whole body, but my kidneys, but it affected everything, my energy. And I had to ask people for more help gradually. I had to actually ask people for a kidney, which was a bit hard at times. Some people actually offered without me even asking, or before I needed one. In the movement, people that I know were extremely generous in their offer, even people that didn't really know me that well. And it was quite overwhelming each time that I realised people were willing to consider doing that. So there was a real turning towards, and I like this idea of turning towards and looking at what might be difficult or painful in relation to Amitabha, because his time of day is the sunset, the setting sun, and the setting sun is a time which we can actually look at the sun. You know, at the midday sun, or you know, when it's really hot, you have to wear your sunglasses or you can't really look at it. But the setting sun, we can sit and watch, and you often have romantic associations or love associations or feel connected to something beautiful when we turn towards it and can look at it. So that was a strong practice for me in my journey towards my transplant. You know, I was in and out of hospital a bit, and in the last, since January really, I got ill again, and I've had two transplants cancelled. One was actually on the day of admission, and it turned out I got my kidneys out 8 weeks before the transplant. The surgeon didn't want to risk operating, risk giving me a transplant with my own kidneys, and I was feeling some fear, what would it mean? And then I was afraid that I would lose the donor, so I sort of just had to feel compassion towards that. Say, okay, well, if I lose the donor, you know, it's safer for me. My life is precious. And people do it, you know. I got to experience dialysis, and that people do that for all their lives. And that the donor stayed with me. And, she just had this generous volition that she wanted to donate and was glad that it was to me. So, yeah, really compassion was alive for me. And like Satchalila said about the connections that I had, people really sent me cards, and you know, there was the Facebook communication. Another friend had agreed to do some updates and send out to other friends in the movement in the order, my friends, my family, and they got to hear about it. So sometimes I got like 20 cards a day in the hospital, and it was so overwhelming. I just had to be patient and take the whole day to open them and cry and share with people, oh, look what so-and-so said to me. So I really felt the love. I felt the love out of people that I didn't really even know very well that had taken the effort to get up, write a card, get my address. So it really touched me, each thing that I imagined somebody did to move towards me and express their care and well-wishing for me. And then I could translate that into all these sort of older ladies in my ward that couldn't reach their box of tissues or something. You know, once I was mobile again, I could sort of translate that and express it to my friends. So definitely, someone described their experience of me as my heart was blown open by metta. And I did feel the presence of Amitabha, you know, all the way through that. Sometimes a lot of the time I didn't meditate, but I would chant. I'd have my mala there with me. After my first operation, I had my kesa, and somebody helped put my kesa on just when I was coming round and sat with me. Someone else after the transplant came up and anonymously sponsored Mahasukha, someone who does chanting in the movement. They sponsored him to come and chant to me in the ward. So it was all, you know, some real connections. And I know him from afar over the years, but yeah, that was beautiful. So, and I felt that the rest of the ward got to benefit from the chant. It was Shakyamuni chant. So I talked about expression there, and the idea that the thought, from the thought manifests the word, from the word manifests the deed or the action. So in relation to what we're looking at tonight, body, speech and mind, so I did feel a lot of compassion for my body, which was suffering. How to be with that in my mind, to turn towards that fear and the panic or worry, and let it transform into the feeling, the love, you know. And my actions at the time, I felt a lot of gratitude, and it was really easy to express it. It just came through me because people were, you know, holding me with such care in their hearts, even from afar. I knew people were thinking about me with love. And one of the things that really helped me has over that last 5 years has been learning about communication, particularly NVC, non-violent communication. So I'm mentioning that because it helps me know what I'm feeling and what I value. They're the two, there's four key things, but the middle two are about what we feel in our bodies and what our needs are or our values or what's important to us. So I'm mentioning that because that's relevant to what we're going to do. So it was an extremely generous act for this person to donate a kidney, and also blood. I had blood transfusions where I actually felt like the red blood was going in me, and it was making a difference at the time. Even the next day, I felt a bit more well each time I had blood. And some, you know, you go to the blood bank and you don't know who's going to get it and the difference it's going to make to someone's life. It was pretty touch and go at the time that I had the blood transfusion. I didn't see myself as somebody that I would be in that situation to need that. And then it was there, and I just felt so much gratitude for these anonymous people who'd given blood. So thanks, everybody, if it was you, whoever it was. So, that's about me. The next part I'm going to, I'm not quite going to hear about you, but you're going to, in fact, if you could tell me, you've told me who's been here and who's not been here before. What I'd like to do is get Satchalila to write up a few things that you call out And I want you to, if you can remember some of the, what are the Buddhas that you've looked at already? Which Buddhas have you looked at in these evenings so far?
Yellow Buddha.
Ratnasambhava. Yeah, Ratnasambhava. And Akshobhya. Is it two? And you've got one to after Amitabha, you've got Amoghasiddhi? Okay. And Virochana. Okay, so of Ratnasambhava and Akshobhya, or maybe you looked at an overview as well at the beginning. I think there might have been a wee overview. If you can remember, what were the qualities that you associate with the Buddhas that you've heard of previously? If you could write some of them up. No, it can go around about them.
Okay. Abundance.
Determination.
Unshakeability.
So, go on.
Humanness. Energy.
Any more?
Wisdom.
So these are all aspects of Shakyamuni, of the enlightened mind, and they all, like the prism, they're from the same light. They interrelate. I think that's all we're going to write for the time being. We will write again in a wee minute. And these qualities, I was hearing about one of the previous talks that Nagamudra had said that he had written about, was writing, was going to come for the Akshobhya night, and he found himself bringing in some of the qualities of Ratnasambhava and the other Buddhas, and that's what happens. You know, it's not just purely Amitabha. It's, you know, we're bringing in wisdom, determination, you know, this transformation, appreciation. So Amitabha has this particular flavour, and I know there's an expression that the Dalai Lama talked about, and I heard also that recently in a talk, that if I'm not able to connect with a particular aspect of enlightenment, I might go to the other side of the mandala and see what's there that I can try and maybe give. You know, Sangharakshita said, if you can't do anything to connect, you can give. You can always give. And the Dalai Lama says of it, generosity is the most natural outward expression of an inner attitude of compassion and loving kindness. Generosity is the most natural outward expression of an inner attitude of compassion and loving kindness. So I'd like you to just be quiet for, I know you're not saying anything, but be quiet for a moment. I'll be quiet for a moment. And I'd like you just to consider any qualities or values in Amitabha that you particularly appreciate. I want you to turn to someone beside you and just tell them. what you connect with, or what it is that you value about Amitabha, what qualities, associations, or what you connect with. So if you want to just take a meditation posture, a posture that's comfortable. Just going to pick one of those qualities or one of those values that is meaningful to you, and we're going to close our eyes and feel how it feels and how it affects you when you're connected to it. So connecting with it now, not thinking about it, but feeling it in your body. Let's really feel where it is in our body when we are connected to that value, that quality. So we feel it in our face, in our heart, in our hands. How do our hands feel when we're connected to it? Our legs, our calves, our feet. Breathe it through our body. Okay. Keep your eyes closed, and now we're going to take a moment to be disconnected from it. Feel how it feels when we're not connected to that quality. We're distant, we're removed from it. We're not in touch with it. Maybe even we're in touch with its opposite, if there is one. You can make a sound if you like. How it feels in a body. In our face, our shoulders, our arms, our abdomen. Okay, that's enough. Now we can reconnect with that quality. Just breathe it in again, the value, what it is that we appreciate and what matters to us. Breathe it through our body. Make a sound again if we like. Feel it in our hands, our face, our legs. I was glad to have tried that with Kema Jyoti earlier, because I hadn't actually done it, and it was, good to experience what it was like, and it was glad she helped me realise that it was helpful to have a little chat at the end of it. Thanks. So I don't know what specifically you each talked about, but I imagine that you had an experience of something that a value that's important to you. And Tsongkhapa says that the heart of goodness is in each of us. You don't need to rely on anybody else's goodness. You have a resource already, which is your own goodness. You are already good, and you can actually transmit that goodness to others. In Buddhism, we call this Buddha nature. Examine yourself and your state of being. You will find that you have the heart of goodness in you. So, yeah. And the Dalai Lama, when we feel love and kindness towards others, it not only makes others feel loved and cared for, but it helps us also to develop inner happiness and peace. And he says, he goes on to say, love is the absence of judgment. Now, from personal experience, I can find that really hard, or to notice when my thoughts are, there's judgment either from on myself or on another. And that's where I found it, nonviolent communication really helpful, to notice and to do the inner work that I need to do to translate that judgment, that message that I'm telling myself, to translate it into what I'm actually feeling and what is important to me. So what you did there, you know, we're feeling in our body what is our physical, our felt experience, and what is it that matters to us. And that thing that you... the value that you reflected on there, the quality, that matters to each of us, all of us. I don't know which one you chose, but I'm sure you want that for yourself, like you want it for all or any of us. It's a universal quality, a universal value. Maybe, depending on what you thought of, but I imagine that to be so. So may we... meditation and Amitabha, sort of the Buddha of meditation, may we notice those thoughts that we have, those messages, and look underneath them to how we feel and what is it that really matters to us. Where are we coming from? What do we need in that situation? What do we long for? You know, if it's fear, maybe we want some ease or to be able to relax. If it's frustration, maybe we want some simplicity. So what do we feel and what is it that's important to us in that situation? And we may have a story that points towards that message, points towards it. If we can turn towards it, like Amitabha turns towards the setting sun, it may take the energy away from it and maybe transform it into kindness and compassion. So we're going to do another exercise which takes this, we're going to play with it a bit. You can stay seated near where your partners are, because we're going to do a sort of spoken practice where we're going to tell our partner the inner speaking, and then the partner's listening. We're going to be practicing metta. Yeah, so it's not just in our felt experience, it's in our spoken experience, and from the thought springs the word, from the word springs the action. Okay, so we've just been feeling it in ourselves, we're going to communicate to a friend. So if you want to sit beside your partner. The Buddha says, if your compassion does not include yourself, it is incomplete. And whatever words we utter should be chosen with care, for people will hear them and be influenced by them for good or for ill, said the Buddha. So you're going to share with your partner your experience of metta towards yourself. And You can say it in the sense of, okay, what you feel, okay, I enjoy because I really value. So when you speak about yourself, I don't want to censor yourself and say, oh, I'm sometimes quite good at such and such. You know, go for it. Go for it. Really connect with that self-compassion and love and say, you know, I really love listening, and I really love being in friendship with someone, you know. So when your partner listens, they're listening to the second person that's there. So that's the second stage in the listening. Mm-hmm. Okay. So decide who's going to go first, and I'll ring the bell halfway when you. No. Okay. So the person who speaks first, decide now who's person A and who's person B. Okay. Okay, so once you've decided that, person A is going to speak first, and they're going to speak out the first stage of the metta. They're going to say, I really enjoy listening. I love really hearing, and I love that when I don't understand, I'll ask the person for clarity. Yes, exactly. Okay, so we'll do that for a couple of minutes, and then we'll listen for the bell. And the person B just listens and receives. The second stage. Person A is going to share with person B some appreciation that they have for a good friend. And because your partner was talking about someone that the listener may not have known, that was both the friend and the neutral person. So we're going to do the same with our difficult person. We're going to speak kindly and see if there's something in that friend, that difficult person, that we can appreciate and speak kindly of. But truthfully, honestly, you know. And let it come back, you know, come back to that feeling in yourself that you want well-being for yourself and all beings. And noticing how we feel in our body, where we experience those feelings, any aliveness that we're in touch with, any positive emotion that we're in contact with. Noticing how we experience it in our body, each part of our body. We're just going to widen our perspective and open up to each other in the room with that warm response that we have to ourselves, our friend, neutral person, difficult person, to each other here in the room. In the city. And the surroundings. Staying in touch with that compassionate response, that loving response we have to ourselves. Widening our circle of compassion and love to embrace and include beings further and further afield, all around the country and overseas, in seas, overseas. All across all the lands and seas in the world. Extend our circle of love and compassion and well-wishing to all beings everywhere. Ryokan talks of the Bodhisattva vow. When I see the misery of those in this world, their sadness becomes mine. Oh, that my monk's robe were wide enough to gather up all the suffering people in this floating world. Nothing makes me happier than Amida Buddha's vow to save everyone. have come to the end of the evening, and I did have a little mantra up my sleeve, but I'm wondering, we're going to do it. Okay, we're going to give the mantra a go. If you want to leave and have a cup of tea and before it's finished, it's fine. If you want to, this is a mantra that we've got two shuris in the room just now. This is a third shuri. This is a mantra that Ratna Shuri, who some of you might have met at Taraloka, Ratna Shuri wrote as part of a puja. And I was doing puja and a tune came, and I took it back to her and I said, listen, I've got this tune to a mantra. Well, do you want to hear it? Oh, yeah. So I chanted it to her. I said, do you mind if I take it about the place and share it? She said, oh, no, I'd be delighted. So it involves this chri. I'm going to chant it twice so that you can hear it, and then I'll ring the bell and I'll start it again. I just want to you to hear it completely, so you know the full mantra. Om Kri Swaha Om Ami Deva Kri Om Kri Swaha Om Ami Deva Kri Om Ami Deva Kri Om Kri Swaha Om Ami Deva Kri Om Kri Swaha Om Ami Deva Kri Om Ami Deva Kri Om Kri Swaha Om Ami Deva Kri Om Kri Swaha Om Ami Deva Kri Om Ami Deva Kri